I'm Brett McCormick, and this is Sports Business Journal's podcast, Unpacks. Today, we're speaking with Kyle Ross with Grand Slam Tennis Tours and Top Notch Management about a tennis competition the two companies launched this week called the Grand Slam Tennis Tours Match Play 120 Series. There's going to be 120 matches. The event will run 6 weeks. It's going to be streamed from multiple locations throughout the U.S. and will feature multiple top 300 ATP and WTA Tour professional tennis players. So I wanted to speak with Kyle to see how he was feeling after the launch of what was undoubtedly a nerve-wracking undertaking in the midst of a global pandemic, and also to find out the details of what went into the planning and logistics to pull this off, especially since he's overseeing this project from his mother-in-law's house in Rhode Island, which he assures me has very good Wi-Fi. So here's my conversation with Kyle Ross on the May 27 edition of SBJ's Unpacks. This event that you're having is a collaboration, like initially between Grand Slam Tennis Tours, which is an official travel partner of the BNP Paribas Open and Australian Open, and Top Notch Management, which is an agency that reps players like John Isner and is a sister company to Grand Slam Tennis Tours. So run me through the planning of this event. Like how did this come together?
Good question. And I mean, Top Notch Management and my role at Top Notch Management is running events. You know, we were slated to run at least four and maybe more, either Challenger Tour or other ITF Pro Circuit events this year. And that got all messed up, you know. But we kind of looked around at a pretty quiet landscape, and you know, we run exhibition events as well. You know, we were looking at the market and the climate. And you know, taking a lot of things into consideration, but it was a situation that was ripe for some exhibition tennis matches and exhibition tennis events to come up. It was a long path to kind of figuring out which pieces of the puzzle were gonna work for us. A lot of different exhibition event formats that are out there. People are adjusting scoring. People are doing single day events, weekend events, a little bit longer events, but nobody had approached something with kind of a 6 week duration. And so we kind of, you know, after 4 or 5 weeks of, you know, pandemic era, kind of spinning the wheels and figuring out how we could pivot and what we could do, we came up with this format and then we kind of brought it to life.
So like how long from say like the start to finish to kind of bring this to fruition?
The BNP Paribas Open was canceled on March 8th. And what day is it now?
May 27th.
May 27th. I think we were locked in to the direction and the event plan probably end of April, I would say. With still a lot of work to do from there.
One of the first questions I had was like, why do this? Because it seems inherently risky and like a really big undertaking.
Yeah, it's a big undertaking than I think a lot of us understood it was going to be. You know, we have multiple locations and you know, fielding all sorts of challenges on pretty much every front. But the alternative is to do very little. You know, the tourism business obviously kind of came to a pretty firm, quick halt. On the agency side, you know, we certainly have all these players, and we're working to connect them with brands and to continue servicing them, make sure that they can train as they need to train. But the business as it typically functions, you know, we're operating at a 10% capacity of what we could do. So it's a matter of sitting at home doing nothing or sitting at home and, you know, being in this weird, chaotic, virtual event management situation. I mean, I think our team is one that's just a little more into staying busy.
You know, you and I have kind of this interesting similarity in that you've got a 4-month-old baby, I've got a 2.5-month-old baby, and you know, the last few months have been pretty fretful. You know, how did it feel yesterday when your event began? I mean, were you nervous, or was it like just you personally? Was it nice to have something else to focus on, or how did you feel?
I felt great. I felt relieved. You know, it was technically day two of our event, but day one was a washout. So the moment those balls started getting hit in that first match, no, it felt good. We have a little countdown going. It's a match play 120 series. And so we have 120 matches to get in over the course of the 6 weeks. And so it felt awesome to tick off, you know, 119, 118, 117. That's it was fun. Our team had a little celebration. We all cracked a beer at the end of the day together. It was nice.
Nice. You guys had some help with this from Genius Sports. Can you tell me about their involvement? You know, one of the things I'm interested in with these events that are kind of starting to pop up all over the place, you know, is I think tennis is sort of regionalizing right now because it's impossible to have world tours because of the pandemic. You know, one of the interesting things to me is like, where's the revenue coming from? You know, are players getting paid? Like how much and things like that. So, but first tell me about like this involvement that you've got with Genius Sports.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to be clear. It's a three-way partnership here. Genius Sports and our counterparts over there have been, you know, exceptionally helpful, and we wouldn't be able to do this without them. You know, Genius Sports delivers the live scoring data, just like, you know, any tennis match that we ever watch throughout the year, that scoring data is being delivered to sports books. And now, you know, just the same way that there's no tourism happening, there's no matches for our players to play in. There's also, you know, very little content on the sportsbook front for these guys. So they came to us, you know, looking to fill a need and to take advantage of an opportunity. And I mean, it was awesome to connect with a group that was open to being creative. You know, seeing some of the looking down the road and seeing some of the potential opportunity and upside. I mean, you know, we're bringing a sustained tennis series back that you know, no other group has been able to do, even though everyone's trying to do this and nobody's been able to get past the, you know, a weekend event or you know, maybe a week or even a 2 week series or something like that. But Genius wanted the long-term play, and they were open to being flexible, working with their camera solutions to help us stream it. They provided a lot of technical support that otherwise we wouldn't have been able to execute on our side. So yeah, no, it's been a great partnership.
I could see how this is like fitting together, because, you know, Grand Slam Tennis Tours obviously has like all this logistical, you know, capabilities, top-notch management, obviously has some access to players, especially some very good ones. And then these guys seem like they would kind of be the final piece of the puzzle to make this happen. So like, I noticed, I was watching the other day and, you know, there's no sponsors on the nets or anything like that. So, you know, are you guys able to generate revenue from this? And are the, tell me about like how the players fit into it as far as pay or prize money or anything like that.
First things first, we are actively looking to put sponsors on those nets. So,
okay, so shout out there.
Yeah. And Brett, if you want to step up personally, you know, put your, right. put your 2.5 months old name on there or something.
Yeah.
Revenue comes from the partnership with Genius Sports. You know, we're delivering a match product to them, and then they are allowed to then, you know, proceed and sell that data on their side. So that there's a transaction happening there that's kind of the core of the event funding. And we're also looking to supplement it with sponsorships. I mean, that's how events work in all times. And so it's no different, really. No different here. There is no ticketing gate here. So, you know, that's usually kind of a third pillar of event revenue. And there's none of that. So we're looking at these two channels for event revenue. And then we're distributing it. We have a significant amount of players to connect with in various locations. These players are of all different rankings. And across the board, every single one of them is now out of work. You know, they operate as independent contractors. Their revenue spigots were just turned off, just like many people's were. The quality of player that we have, and we have, I mean, I think right now, Laura Siegemund is 65 in the world. Yeah, we have a number of top 100 players already committed, and I think as this kind of goes on and gains momentum, we're going to get many more. A lot more interest from top players. We're talking with some people who are in the top 50 right now. It's cool. It's gonna get some attention, and we're excited about bringing in that top end. But the core of this is, you know, we can work with players inside the ATP and WTA top 300. So that gives us a bit of flexibility, although we have to make sure they're in locations where we have courts. Of those 600 players, they're currently spread out all over the world as well. So it's not like we have everyone to choose from. And, you know, so that range of player, though, I mean, that's a challenger tour player. It's a first round prize money consideration at a challenger event where they're making $200 for a first round, spot, maybe something into the 300s for the second round. They spend all their time, grinding on that tour, on those events to make very little money. And so we're trying to kind of step in and provide them with at least an option to kind of maintain that. I mean, otherwise they don't have too much going on for themselves. A lot of them have agreements with coaches and who knows where they're staying and then their rent situations. I mean, we heard a story about a woman who's playing in Friday's match where she's been working 12-hour shifts at Amazon just to make ends meet. There's just a wide range and everybody has a different kind of personal situation, but we're certainly distributing money, and we're glad to. We're trying also to create a prize money pot. Again, we're looking for some sponsorship help with that. Currently, it's a appearance fees per match is how we're distributing those.
With something like this, do you have to run this by anybody, like the ITF, or just let it rip?
We've been in frequent touch with the TIU, the Tennis Integrity Unit.
Yeah, with the gambling aspect, right?
Exactly, and we have a certified chair umpires. It's a situation not unlike any other exhibition match that has ever existed. And yeah, we were in touch and in line with TIU and all their protocols, and the folks over at Genius Sports are doing the same on their end. And so yeah, we have to make sure we provide an event that has sporting integrity, and we've done so.
Obviously, this is going on during a pandemic, so I'm curious, like, what kind of COVID-19 mitigation are you guys doing? I mean, from what I watched yesterday, it's pretty sparsely attended. So, I mean, right there, it seems like you've got a lot of distance between people and not many people on site.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a prerequisite of any hosting location that we have to have closed doors. Very limited access to the club and the courts. The whole premise is that it is a live stream only event, specific and kind of authentic to this little period. So no, we don't want to see any fans at any of these matches. And if they are there, we have to kindly ask them to step back and keep their spacing. Otherwise, we're doing all the standard tennis protocols. We have hand sanitizers on court. The players are keeping their spacing. They're using their own kind of independent and marked balls for serving. We've requested that they bring their own towels, bring their own waters and Gatorades and stuff. Trying to keep as much of a bubble kind of around the players and the court personnel as possible. We have one on site kind of point of contact to manage the event, but otherwise everything is virtual and remote. It's one of the weirdest things, doing all this has been running an event while not being there. I mean, it runs opposite to so many other events that I've run where you have to be on site and you have this huge team there to support everything, and now we've backed off and there's this virtual spacing between us all, and then certainly on court we're proceeding within COVID-19 guidelines.
What's been the trickiest logistical aspect of this project? I mean, I guess not being there in person, but what parts were difficult to solve?
From the top-notch management side, I think the feedback you would get would be player recruitment. That has been, it's a huge challenge of kind of awareness of where players are and what locations they're in. We had to do, just a lot of research on figuring out what area would make sense to even set up a court. So we have one in Orange County, we have one in Orlando, we're getting one up in Boca, we have one in Columbus, and those were just dictated by the players that were there and where we thought it made sense to set up those courts. And then also, just kind of connecting with them and getting the players to agree to these matches and kind of, working through scheduling. I mean, usually scheduling comes through, it's an ATP mandated thing where the tournament and the tour supervisor, create the schedule and it is what it is. But here, we have there's a lot more kind of personality and unique individual situations to keep in mind. I mean, we have players driving 2 hours from Tampa to Orlando to make their match on Monday morning. And we had to give them a heads up that it was raining and, don't leave, we're going to cancel the match because we can't have them just driving 4 hours for nothing. It's got a different flavor, some of the player management stuff. From an event operations perspective, I mean, finding these locations, making sure the internet and power is all squared away, doing this in a, in a pandemic environment, and then finding personnel. We don't have staff on on our full-time team in all these places. So, you know, we turned to our contact list of relationships in the tennis industry to connect with folks who could help us out, you know, in each location. And it's hard, you know, it's been a grind. We've had a lot of support from friends and then people that we've worked with for years and kind of in different ways. And, you know, they've been able to help us move this forward in every location.
And you've been doing this from your mother-in-law's house. How's her internet in Rhode Island?
Rhode Island internet is great. Yep.
Excellent. Yeah, she came through for you. That's good. During the last few months, I've written a couple of stories and little newsletter entries about companies that kind of got hit by trickle-down impacts of something like the ATP and WTA Tour suspending play, you know, including I wrote about you guys, I think, last month or the month before. Tell us what the last few months has been like for your company.
It's been weird. It's been weird. On the Grand Slam Tennis Tour's front, it's been weird and really, you know, if not sad, then just kind of vulnerable as you look to the future, you know? I mean, we just see all these events that are the core of our 30-year business. And, you know, we would typically be in Paris right now. We'd be gearing up for Wimbledon. And it's a kind of a schedule and a calendar and a rhythm that we're just in. You know, we typically measure our years by tournaments. And you know, we know that July is Wimbledon and September is US Open. And we just talk about all these events as they kind of dictate our, you know, the scheduling of our lives. And so to have that all just kind of not only have it wiped out, but also to have it kind of maybe wiped out. You know, there's been so much uncertainty with decisions that have been made and rescheduling. And now, you know, Roland Garros is now in September and is the US Open going to happen? So there's been a whole lot of uncertainty. And along with that, there's been a, you know, a steady challenge of customer service issues as well. You know, we have these clients who were just like us, you know, very excited about their trips. And they want answers a lot of times that we don't have too. So it's been hard, but I mean, I think within that we've stayed agile and been able to kind of, you know, look ahead and if we can take advantage of any opportunities within this, we're certainly going to try to. You know, usually there's some way to pivot in every situation and try to make the best of it. And so I think that's kind of what led us to going all in on this Match Play 120 series as well.
You mentioned in an email that you guys got a PPP loan. When I think of the PPP program, I kind of think of like a business like yours.
And it has served us very well. You know, none of us would be working on this project, and you know, a lot of tennis players wouldn't be playing matches without that PPP loan right now. We all shut it down for a couple of weeks, and we were, you know, on unemployment, and things were, you know, a little weird and a little quiet. I mean, we were certainly comforted by the fact that millions of other Americans were in the same situation, but it was an odd time too. And then, you know, when that PPP loan came in, it allowed us to put the lights back on and just kind of charge ahead. Cause I mean, we have a couple months runway now of a full team and, you know, we're all on full employment here. So let's make the most of it and kind of go from there is how we approach it.
With customers, I mean, are you like giving refunds or credits for next year, or, you know, have you let them decide, or is that a decision you guys made? How's that work?
We're doing a lot of refunds and a lot of credits. And it was interesting. I mean, the whole process was one in which we were able to kind of be flexible and learn along the way. I mean, our policy for the BMP was something that we got notification on Sunday evening before Monday's tournament start that the event was canceled. And so, you know, we gathered around the table at like 9 PM and we talked about our policy for this and how it's going to take shape and what it means. And at that time, I mean, it was a different landscape, you know. I mean, the world changed very quickly, during those first kind of 2, 4, 6 weeks. And so we had to stay very adaptable. We've issued, probably upwards of millions of dollars, $1 million worth of refunds along the way for BMP, for Wimbledon, for many other events. We were grateful that a lot of clients chose a credit option, you know, that really helped us a bunch. And it was a nice way to kind of connect with clients who were investing in our company to continue thriving when all this resettles into some sort of new normal. You know, it was encouraging to see people believe that the tennis tour would come back, to have them trust us enough to keep their money, and and just with the promise that we would take them to another event, whenever that is. You know, we have a lot of customer loyalty, and I mean, yeah, in regular best of times, we probably have 60% return customers on every one of our trips. So yeah, we know these clients, and we see them year after year at multiple events. You know, while it was hard, certainly to issue all those refunds and just kind of see our business go from a very healthy place to one that was, you know, a little less healthy and far less certain. There were also some good opportunities to hear some nice words, to have people do some very nice things for our team, whether it was sending gift baskets or just, you know, I think we got a check in the mail for like $10,000 just to help the team around. We've worked really hard to create relationships with these clients over the years. And so it was a nice moment where they were able to kind of rally behind us a bunch as well.
Like I said, these kinds of events are starting to kind of pop up all over the globe. Like, you know, Novak Djokovic has put together a pretty impressive one in the Balkans. I know you're just a few days into this, but like at first glance, do you see like any aspects of these types of events that might leak into tour tennis maybe? You know, I know there's been some different scoring, broadcast, organization, safety. I mean, any of those things you think might be able to stick around the sport even after the pandemic maybe hopefully eventually wanes?
It's a great question. And it's one to just kind of, you know, wonder and do a little thought experiment around. I guarantee that some of the stuff doesn't entirely shift back to normal, whether it's something as simple as court cleaning measurements on tour and what those standards are. But also, I mean, we could come out of here with a greater appreciation for the abbreviated scoring systems. You know, the next gen events have been pushing next gen scoring. You know, they're calling it for a while now. And you know, personally, I don't like it. I think there's some you know, structure to keeping the at the very least. Yeah, I'm not going to get into a best of five versus best of three discussion, but to keeping the best of three with standard you know, a full third set and full 7-point tiebreaks to me is an important part of the game. It'd be like adjusting a baseball baseball game to suddenly having six innings, and it's just, you know, it's different. It changes everything. It changes statistics. Yeah. It changes values of fitness and endurance and stuff like that. But I mean, one thing that this little moment with all these exhibition events could lead to is you know, some sort of shifting appreciation for abbreviated scoring. And I think that's absolutely something that could make its way into tour events and stuff like that. Your question about kind of the regionality of some of these events and what might take shape as this goes on. I mean, I think it's probably largely dictated by how long it goes on. A lot of countries and kind of national, you know, tennis federations are starting to organize their own independent events. And I know New Zealand has one going on. The UK and the LTA recently announced that they're organizing some events for UK players. I think that the USTA has probably been a little hamstrung by the fact that, you know, this is on top of what is otherwise the American tennis season. So they probably can't do too much to organize events on their own when they're just canceling existing ATP tour events as well. So it's a tricky spot for the USTA right now, but I think once the Open passes, whether it happens or doesn't happen or happens in some weird way, I think we'll probably see some more stuff on the US front with organizing kind of, you know, tennis federation events.
I think that's a good way to sum up the best thing that could happen for tennis this year is if it happens in a weird way. And I would say the way that you're holding this event right now is tennis happening in a weird way, but at least it's tennis happening. And, you know, helping you guys put some money in the bank and players as well. And, you know, something for some people to watch if they're able to watch you guys streaming on the Grand Slam Tennis Tour's website. So Kyle, thanks for joining us. And I'm sure you've got a baby to feed or something, you know, something you need to do on a court in Florida. So we'll let you run, but thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Brett. I appreciate it. Yeah. I've got a baby to watch and some tennis matches to feed. So I'll get to it.
Perfect. All right. Take care.